is number 031430, Stahl against St. Anthony Crown Hospital. Mr. Easterbottom.
Good morning. May it please the court. This is a case where the trial judge granted summary judgment on Ms. Stahl's claim of discrimination. We had asserted below that Ms. Stahl's claim arising under Title VII presented evidence of direct evidence of discrimination. The only issue with respect to the indirect evidence claim under McDonnell-Douglas, there was only one issue raised below of the four elements, and that was with respect to the fourth element. There was no dispute that Ms. Stahl could make the other three elements of a McDonnell-Douglas claim. I want to focus, if I may, on the issue of a direct evidence claim. This is a situation in which Ms. Stahl had largely done the job for the defendant hospital for a number of years. A new administrator, a new managerial supervisor was hired, Dr. Netluck, who in essence split her job into two, a full-time and a part-time job. At the time that Dr. Netluck did this, Ms. Stahl had two small children, twins about a year and a half old, I think, at the time. And a number of times, the record indicates three, four, or five times, she was asked by one or the other decision makers. There was a vice president of nursing who was also involved, a lady named Ms. Decker, as to whether or not her home situation, her family life, her children, so on, would affect her ability to do her job, and on one specific instance, whether her children would affect her desire or ability to do her job. Now,
well, let me ask you this. Do you think, I mean, in light of the fact that she had gone down to, I think she was working 2 days at home, isn't that kind of a different situation than what we often see here where there are inquiries made into family life when that isn't even on the table? In other words, wasn't that an appropriate line of questioning or conversation, at least, by the
inquiry? Well, it may have been at one point, but the record in this case is that, in fact, Ms. Stahl had made arrangements to begin to work full-time. The arrangement for working at home, of course, had been made with the previous vice president of Ms. Coyne and had been approved by the hospital, obviously. Ms. Stahl made the had begun making arrangements, in fact, to work full-time and had made that point with her supervisor, so that should no longer have been an issue.
But she was not on full-time at the time of the conversation.
She was on full-time, but working at home part of the time.
Not full-time physically.
That's correct. But she had, in fact, stated that she would be and had begun to make arrangements, I think, for daycare, whatever the appropriate term would be for that age, at the time. And in the record is that she had made the decision makers aware of that fact, yet this issue continued to come up. Now, one of the things that Dr. Netluck said is that he had never inquired into this sort of family life or the effect of having family or children with respect to any male employee. Now, we submitted that made this case a direct evidence case, and we believe that it is. If taking the facts and reasonable inferences in favor of the non-movement, you have a woman who's asked whether her family life will affect her ability or desire to work, and who is subsequently told by Dr. Netluck, if she's to be believed, that she's not in fact qualified for a job she had largely been performing, even though at his deposition Dr. Netluck had to concede that she was in fact qualified for each of the jobs.
Now, these men that were made reference to, were those positions that they held similar to what she had applied for?
Well,
I think that's
where the court believed that we should have gone into who were these men. And it was, in fact, a general statement. The point is that the statement is that no men had this area of inquiry opened up with respect to them. None, not one. And I think at that juncture, when you're talking about a hospital, I mean, at that juncture, I don't believe that we were required to go into the specifics of, well, name the men who weren't asked these questions. The point is, it is not an issue with respect to any of the men who are employed, at least by these two managerial agents of the hospital. Now, the case law is clear, including the Bruno versus City of Smom Point case, which the court below relied on partially. It is clear that employers may ask these questions of employees, but they may not do so, which is the proposition for which the court below cited it, but they may not do so only of one protected category of employees. And in this case, the evidence in the light taken most favorably to Ms. Dahl is that that is precisely what happened, that not one single male had ever been asked these questions by these two decision makers, at least, and yet she, as a woman, had the matter continuously brought up to her. Now, we would respectfully submit that what's happened here is that that we believe, as we have said in our brief, that the trial court weighed the evidence, and furthermore, that it conflated the standards for direct evidence with an indirect evidence case. The fact of the matter, because we could not show, because the person who ultimately got the job was a woman, and the court said we therefore could not show that somebody outside the class, that of course comes into the McDonnell Douglas case. But the evidence, of course, also was, and this was cited by the court, that no man applied for the job. So of necessity, a woman was going to get the job. And in a direct evidence case, it just shouldn't matter. I think it was Judge Posner who wrote in the Shager versus Upjohn opinion that if the inference of discrimination arises, there must be a trial. Here, the court went on to weigh the evidence in essence, sort of negate the ability of Ms. Dahl to make a direct evidence case, in essence because she had no comparators. And that's clear on page 12 of the court's opinion. And that just is not what a direct evidence case is all about. With respect to the indirect evidence case, the issue was who is in her class. And there was some issue about whether or not this was a RIF case and so on. The fact of the matter is, this could not have been a RIF case because there was not, in fact, a reduction in force. In any event, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Dingham.
May it please the court, counsel. Counsel has just acknowledged that, in response to Your Honor's question, at one time in this case it was appropriate for St. Anthony Medical Center to have asked the plaintiff, Ms. Dahl, whether she would be interested in incurring the cost of and arranging for child care. If it was appropriate at one time during this hiring process, we submit that Judge Miller correctly concluded that inquiry was appropriate during the balance of the hiring process until a decision was reached about who to hire.
So isn't there a point with repeated questioning on this that the company crosses the line?
Well,
even though it began as appropriate?
Your Honor, I would agree that there may be some circumstances that could be conceived of where there would be a tendency to believe that repeated inquiries would rise to the level of something that would be discriminatory or be create inferences of a discriminatory animus toward a particular gender. That certainly, the record reflects, was not the case here. And I believe that the Bruno versus City of Crown Point case can demonstrate why. In the Bruno case, which was relied upon by Judge Miller, the court did indicate that an employer may ask about a potential employee's family circumstances, including questions about child care, and is not required to ignore an applicant's family responsibilities. The court specifically said that such questions, as we've now had agreed to in this court, appropriate and sometimes, under some circumstances, probably necessary. The point is that Judge Mannion, in the Bruno opinion, did go on to say that this, of course, assumes that the questions are asked in a neutral and non-discriminatory manner of all applicants. And while the family questions are important an interviewer should not single out women and focus on them as if they were the only sex that would have to be concerned with child care.
And that speaks to the point that counsel made,
exactly,
that no men were asked this.
And my response to that is twofold. First of all, in the Bruno case, when Judge Mannion was making that caution so that it wouldn't just be a blanket statement without some boundaries, he pointed out that in that case, the applicant for a paramedic position was asked, what would your husband think of you taking this job? And was asked, are you going to be having any more children? In other words, there was a flavor of a sexual stereotype going on in that case where a male interviewer was singling out a female and asking the female applicant, but not asking the male applicants for that same position, those sexual stereotypical questions. In stark contrast, in this case, it is very important to recognize that there were never any questions like that asked by either Dr. Netluck, a male, or Nurse Linda Decker, another female who was interviewing people for this job. They did not ever ask any questions other than, Julie, are you going to be interested in arranging for changing the circumstances that you're working under right now? Because what happened here is that there were three programs that were in financial straits. They were consolidated. That resulted in Ms. Stahl's position being redefined. She wanted the job that was going to be the manager over these three consolidated departments, as opposed to the position she had been holding, which was manager over only one department. Dr. Netluck explained to her, and it's explained in the record, he felt that was a key position that he was interviewing for. And he explained that that position was going to have to be done full-time at the hospital. And that is why that question is not based on sexual stereotype. The question is not a product of this plaintiff's gender. It was a product of the fact that these parties were quite familiar with each other. She was already in a management position, not being discriminated against. She had a maternity leave. She was then, through some progressive management thinking, given the opportunity to work half of her part-time job from home. Now she wants a full-time, critical position that has to be conducted at the facility. There is nothing that raises any discriminatory inference about a practical and necessary question to see whether the person actually would want to make those changes in order to put herself in a position to do the job. Judge Miller clearly understood that that dialogue created no inference, even if the question came up a couple of times, and there is no other part of the case which would give any flavor to that discussion being somehow the product of a gender bias. In addition to the Bruno case, which we believe definitely supports Judge Miller, the propriety of his summary judgment order, the Matto-Endereg case also is instructive in this case. In that case, a school teacher was being interviewed, and during the interview process, she was told by the interviewer that his own wife was a teacher, but that she had made the appropriate decision to stay at home with her children, who were the number one priority. In that case, ultimately, she was told to go home and spend more time with her children, and then her contract was not renewed. In the Matto-Endereg case, Judge Evans for the Seventh Circuit specifically said, when we are evaluating, as Judge Miller did and as we are doing now, direct evidence in support of a plaintiff's position, we look at the context in which the statement was made, including ambiguous statements, suspicious timing, discrimination against other employees, and other pieces of evidence, non-conclusive in itself, but together composing a convincing mosaic of discrimination against the plaintiff. And in the Matto-Endereg case, there was a determination that the mosaic detracted from claims that those comments were direct evidence of discrimination as opposed to supporting it. The Matto-Endereg case is supportive in this instance. The mosaic of evidence in this case detracts from any argument that there was gender bias motivating the questions by either Dr. Netluck or Nurse Decker toward Ms. Stahl about whether she would simply be interested in arranging for childcare if she, in fact, wanted to take this full-time job at the St. Anthony Medical Center facility. Judge Miller had no difficulty reaching that conclusion, and we see no reason why this court should not do the same in affirming summary judgment. The other aspect of that mosaic which detracts from allegations of gender discrimination is that ultimately Nurse Barb Lombarkowski, another female nurse at St. Anthony Medical Center, was ultimately selected for the position. What was the difference? She was already, although a mother of two, working full-time at the facility. So she was not asked about child care, even though she was a mother of two, because she wasn't going to have to make any changes. Now, with regard to not asking a male, it is our position, and Judge Miller fully agreed, that the fact that no male applied for the job, and the fact that no male, therefore, ever was in a position to be asked about whether he was the person that would have to make arrangements for child care to accept the position, creates no inference of gender discrimination whatsoever. The question was never posed to Dr. Netluck in a way that would give any information that would have been helpful to Judge Miller or helpful to this court. There simply was not a situation where a male was in a position to have to be asked the practical and necessary question. A blanket question to Dr. Netluck about whether he ever asked a male that, without ever getting more specific to say, was there ever a male in a situation similarly situated to Ms. Stahl where you didn't bother to ask him if the child care was going to be a barrier to the job? That's the question that's not in this record. That's the question that could have created a genuine issue of material fact. There is nothing in the record to counter the gender-neutral, practically necessary dialogue that occurred in this case. Under those circumstances, there was no conflagration of or mixing of the analysis of direct evidence and burden-shifting analysis. Simply in accordance with Matto Endereg, you can't look at a case in isolation. You look at the applicable law, and then you decide that law based upon the undisputed material facts of the case. That's what was done here. Judge Miller correctly determined that there was no direct evidence of discrimination. He correctly determined that Ms. Stahl did not satisfy the demonstration of a prima facie case of gender bias because she could not show that anyone outside of her protected class was treated less favorably. And in any event, even if that had occurred, St. Anthony Medical Center has articulated in the record a non-discriminatory and legitimate basis for its hiring decision. And on that score, we believe that Judge Miller's summary judgment was entirely appropriate and should be affirmed. Thank you.
How much time is it? You have 3 minutes, and we gave counsel a bit extra time, so we'll make that.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, the legitimate non-discriminatory reason proffered by counsel, actually, there was, in fact, no reason actually designated below. There were arguments of counsel made in the brief, but no actual proffered reason based on sworn testimony in the form of an affidavit or in a deposition, plus which, with respect, of course, to a direct evidence case, the proffered reason doesn't matter. That is part of the McDonnell-Douglas case. One place where we've gotten off track, and I don't believe that I've made any concession here today, I was asked a very specific question by Your Honor, Judge Williams, and I responded to it. This is not there is not evidence viewed from in the light most favorable to Ms. Farrell of constant conversations about daycare and whether or not the plaintiff is willing to have to make arrangements for daycare. There are constant questions about whether the fact that she has children affects her desire or her ability to do her job. Now that is a very different statement than asking what arrangements for daycare have you made. And I think that that fact, coupled with the fact that not a single male employee of any kind for any position, being considered for any position, had been asked any question of that nature, certainly falls within the language of Bruno versus the city of Crown Point. It is sufficient to raise an inference that there was a discriminatory animus. And that is all that has to occur for Ms. Stahl to get to trial, to a jury, notwithstanding whatever justifications or excuses which counsel tendered, which the defendants themselves in the managerial employments below did not. I think that the conflation of the two different standards arose precisely because the court looked in the direct evidence case as to who got the job ultimately, and that is another way of saying that you cannot demonstrate that someone outside the class was better treated, which is of course a part of a McDonnell Douglas case and no part of a direct evidence case. We think that there is there was ample evidence that was sufficient to raise the inference of discrimination. Whether the questioning was as innocuous as counsel would suggest from this podium, that is, well, it only had to do with daycare, when in fact that is not what the plaintiff said the questions were about. They were directly relating to the fact that she had children and whether that affected her ability as well as her desire to do the job. That, I think, allows us to get to a jury. If there are no other questions, I thank Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.